thought that was only a responsible way to do it. But that leaves us...
Beyond that, you were told you had to.
Well, all right. I mean, yeah, the state told us we had to. Yeah, I mean, this is all intertwined. But nevertheless, we did it. You can put any spin on it you want to, but that's the way it is.
Yeah.
And our taxpayers are footing the bill for the local share. And so we have a concern that these people have sewer service. Now, the DEQ has declared the groundwater in this particular basin to be contaminated, and they do not allow new construction except on sewers in this area. So that's another reason for the provision of urban services by a city. These folks need sewers, and that wasn't our idea. That we had nothing to do with the building of the houses, the septic tanks, or the determination by DEQ. That's just another fact that's there.
Okay. This is a question because I don't know the answer. Did City of Eugene ever testify on having three criteria for contamination of groundwater rather than four?
I'd have to ask Pat that. I don't know. That was
a fairly recent change and was significant in mid-Multnomah County in terms of whether sewers would be mandated or not.
Chair Young, I don't know the answer to that question. I know our Deputy Public Works Director, Terry Smith, is in the audience. He may know the answer to that question.
Would you identify yourself?
I'm Patricia Decker, and I'm Principal Planner with the City of Eugene.
Yes, Chairman Young, Terry Smith, City of Eugene, Deputy Public Works Director. The statute that you're talking about that includes the three or four criteria is the Threat to Drinking Water Statute 454 or something or other, as I recall. It does not apply to River Road, Santa Clara. It applies only to the Mid-Multnomah County area. So we have virtually been uninvolved in whether it's three criteria, four criteria, or whatever.
Okay. Thank you.
Back to River Road, Santa Clara. So we have this situation where Eugene feels committed to providing the services, and that's the law. The state law, not just our local policy. And we have made other provisions. We have a fire redeployment plan. Our fire department has plans for reorganizing the location of the fire stations to better serve this area. And we serve River Road now under a contract with the Rural Fire District. So we are providing fire services in half the area, but residents are paying separately for that to the city. So we feel as if we have taken our responsibilities seriously. We also have put in the trunk line. We applied to EPA and got one of the last grants that came from that federal agency for a trunk sewer, put that line in the ground about three summers ago because it was absolute certainty that it would be needed. We were in a position to apply for the grant, save the residents of that area something like $500 apiece. We made them a gift. I'm not sure that they all appreciate it. However, it really genuinely was a gift. And the City of Eugene was the only entity that was in a position to do that. So, from our perspective, we have an assignment to provide urban service to these folks. And we are proceeding on that assignment. Something was said about police service. Right now, we, of course, provide service to the areas that are within the city, the yellow and the green on the map. The Lane County Sheriff provides a very minimal level of service in the white area. The rest is provided by the state police, which raises a whole other question of double taxation and whether the taxpayers of the state of Oregon really ought to be providing a level of police service for a metropolitan urban area. But that's the way the situation is operating at the present time. So these are the kinds of complexities that we have in this particular situation. And so the City of Eugene feels that since we have this responsibility, we need the tools to carry it out. And we have been using non-contiguous annexation under the supervision of the Boundary Commission as one of those tools. There can be no additional development on this land without sewer service. That's a state determination. So people do come to us and ask for annexation so they can hook to the sewers or have other services, for instance, water service. So we have been providing those services. And we feel that under the situation that we're operating in, we need the kind of authority that we have now in the two statutes that are under discussion. I mean, that these two statutes would remove. Just give you a quick summary, that we need the Boundary Commission to help us implement our land use planning under state law. As far as costs are concerned, if the Boundary Commission was abolished, it wouldn't save any money. You would have different people doing analysis, but the analysis would still have to be done. Another point as elected official that I would like to make. You people here are engaged in policy and legislation. At the local level, we do that primarily. We also, in land use planning, are drawn into some quasi-judicial determinations, or we have been, things like variances, zone changes, and things like that. In the city of Eugene, we have referred all those particular quasi-judicial matters to a hearings official, our planning commission, and then on to the courts. We found those very difficult to deal with. You get into areas where you don't have a lot of expertise, where you get a lot of political pressure, and you have to keep telling people, I can't talk to you, it's an ex parte contact, and the public doesn't really understand that very well. It's a difficult arena for an elected official, the quasi-judicial. And we're very comfortable with having those particular matters dealt with by a group of appointed officials who are responsible through the political process in a different way, appointed by the governor. That seems to be a system that works better for us than the direct political pressure. And in this, if this bill were to pass, then the county commissioners would be drawn into that kind of political arena in making these decisions. Which makes them interpreters of state law. It's my feeling that a lot of this would end up in the courts, which is another long and complex process for making these determinations. So the Boundary Commission limits the proliferation of small units of government. You already know that. And it prevents it lessens the likelihood of urban development where there are not sufficient services because we have this review situation. So much for 3413. I want to say just a word on 3256 about the non-contiguous cherry stem annexation. The annexation tools are limited now. And we feel as if we're in something of a catch-22. We've been told to provide the services, but when we try to meet our needs provided for providing a full range of services and bringing these people into a situation where they pay our taxes and get our services, it's difficult. We're talking about a situation within an urban growth boundary where the decisions about where the city is going to be have already been made. We're not talking about just any place. This is a very particular situation that already is at urban density. We're not talking about vacant fields very much. There you can find a few, but that's not the general focus. So it's a particular situation that needs a particular solution, and we have been applying the one we have, and we would like to ask you to allow us to continue to do that.
Questions?
She's very thorough.
Yes.
What do you do in the real world?
Huh? I'm a city councilor.
I mean, do you have a
She must have raised profession four boys. Or
something? Well, I'm a community activist volunteer. Oh, you put a label on it. Nobody pays me, in other words.
Always nice to know.
Yeah, it's nice having you here today.
Thank you.
That's not going to keep me from beating up on her.
Let's one more. None of the ex parte law that doesn't do much good for me, but you can't talk to somebody who comes and asks you about something because of that. But on the other side, you can ask your staff about it, can't you?
You can ask the staff for information.
Is that a fair shake to your citizen out there?
Well, that's why I say we found it a very awkward situation, so we got out of it. We do not, there may be one or two situations, we don't get those very often anymore, though, where we have...
not some changes.
Have that kind of quasi-judicial process.
But on the other hand, the county commissioners come in here and say, let's get rid of the boundary commission, we don't like it, and they'll take over those responsibilities you're talking about.
Yes, they will.
Okay.
Then they're going to have to figure out how to tell the public they can't talk to them.
And they came in and testified that they'd like to have
them. Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Cease.
Why, in your judgment, is the Moline County commissioners willing to, or not only willing, but say they want to take the function? Why? What's the sense of that, do you think? I would agree with you. I think if they knew what it involves, I don't think they'd want it. But but on the other hand, they say they want to take it over. And why, in your judgment?
They are split 3-2. And it's my perception that this is a political party contest. Representative Campbell is a strong figure in Lane County politics for obvious reasons.
He's what? I didn't hear that.
A strong figure.
Could you name one reason?
Yeah.
We have trouble figuring that out.
Interesting background.
All right. You know, I need to draw you a little picture.
You got to get something out here for the man over here. To your left.
He's not writing very fast.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Representative Wehage.
One of the things I struggle with is the fact that most of the counties do handle this themselves. And here's a situation where we have an opportunity to eliminate an extra layer of government where a county commission could take it over relatively easily. And I have a concern that the arguments that are being presented to keep the boundary commission, it's more a matter of inexperience with what they, I mean, the other people being inexperienced with what they do. Of course, the county commissioner said that they would be willing to take it over. But it just seems as though we've had 20 years of operating with the Boundary Commission. There's been a history now. Why is there resistance to letting the county commission to take this over? It's being done in so many other counties. Why can't Lane County commissioners take this over and do just as good a job?
Well, Representative Wehage, Lane County is a more urbanized county than many of the others, obviously, and our problems are more complex in terms of providing services and the level of services need. I mean, not very many people have $100 million treatment plans, which makes the issues much more complex and have made us feel as if we needed this process and it's worked well for us. I can understand why the counties of Eastern Oregon would not be interested in this kind of concept and have never used it, never needed it. But we feel as if we have a situation that it works well for us.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Cease.
Well, let me ask you a question because I think it's at the, in reference to some of the comments you made, because I think it may be at the heart of some of the issues. As you've indicated in some of the activities like planning, where you rely very much on a hearings officer and the experts, people who are trained and professionals, and it goes to a large extent up through the process, in many cases to the courts, and doesn't touch the council that frequently. Would one be able to argue that for those interests or groups who believe that they would have a better day or more opportunity to make their case heard and get a better response by going directly to the elected politicians, isn't in part that's the argument many people are making? They feel that they have a better chance with the elected politicians than they have with the experts who are dealing with fairly set procedures in some way, but you can't bring to bear the same political influences, can you?
Representative Cease, there is a school of thought that says no one should ever be required to pay for services or to be annexed who does not wish to do so. In other words, we're dealing with people who don't want what's happening to them. And that's very understandable. I mean, I have a lot of sympathy for that too, and I don't like to pay assessments any better than anybody else. But when you have a groundwater pollution situation, which is caused by the large number of people living in a relatively small area, you have to use techniques that sometimes people aren't going to like. And I think, yes, your analysis is correct, that the people who don't want to pay the sewer assessment probably think they have a better chance before the county commissioners. I'd just like to point out it wasn't the city of Eugene that decided they ought to have sewers. That was the state. So I think it's fair to come to the state and say this tool works for us. We'd like to let you, I'd like to have you continue to let us use it.
Would you say then that when it comes to issues like pollution, that you can't buy the argument that everyone has a vote on an issue that, to determine whether you're going to pollute or not?
Yeah, I would say that pollution doesn't go away because you have an election on it. And health problems are not solved because the majority thinks they're not there.
Thank you.
Back again. And I would like to also add that I think you've done a fine job of presenting Eugene's case on why you're doing what you're doing and why you want to be able to keep on doing it. But getting back to some of these annexations, why did you institute the annexation that was primarily the right-of-way of the Beltline Road?
We have, well...
Now, it doesn't show there, but there was an attempt at an annexation. I think something happened. There were some people that could vote on it, and it there was a remonstrance, and it was voted down, if I'm
Representative correct. Young, I should say that we have never tried to do what... Someone has suggested in this hearing that if we annexed all of Beltline, we could turn it into an island, and that we have not attempted that. I want to get right up front. But I'm going to ask Pat
you
Decker
didn't,
to
you
talk
didn't,
about
you
a particular
didn't institute
annexation.
An annexation that was primarily the right-of-way?
Pat has more information than I do.
Because maybe we've been given bad information.
Let me respond. The comments that Mr. Saul made, Representative Young, on the Beltline annexation issue was initiated primarily to get at the issue of police service. That issue about islanding River Road was brought up and there was concern expressed, and our council has a position on that issue, which Councilor Hsu would probably like to talk about. But the Beltline annexation was not intended as a means of islanding River Road, and that was identified at the time. It was intended as a means of addressing service issues that are concerns about accidents on Beltline Road in areas where our police do not have authority.
Okay, let me get it clarified, though. There's nothing that would prohibit you from reinstituting that annexation, excluding the property owners, and annexing as much of Beltline Road as you wanted to before, for whatever reason, whether it be police or to form an island. While you're thinking, we have to deal with things the way they are and the way things have happened. And this committee last year saw over 7,000 people brought into the city of Gresham under an island annexation, and with the city manager sitting where you're sitting and saying, and we asked him, you know, kind of progress this, and why did it work out that way? And he said, we had resistance. We went around the resistance. We only had a month left. We did the annexations we needed to form an island and then annex those people. So we're not talking about, you know, gee, something like this could happen someday with some council somewhere. We're saying this happened 2.5 years ago in the city of Gresham, where they purposely used not specifically or as blatantly just right away, but they encircled an area of 7,000 people and took them in without any opportunity to remonstrate. And you're telling me that you have that there's no way you would do that?
Well, Representative Young, I understand as I sit here there's no way I can bind a future city council, but it is not the policy of the current city council to do that.
But you did initiate a... Could you show us, for the committee, on there, how large an area you were going to take in of Beltline Road?
We'll hardly even remember. Linda says she got it.
It might be easier to point out what wasn't going to be taken in.
Mr. Chairman, Linda Lynch.
Yes.
The part across the populated area here was not going to be taken in.
Okay. Chairman Young, if
yes.
I may. When that project was initiated, it was initiated and also included a number of industrial properties. The initiation was not just for the Beltline Road area. Just wanted to clarify that.
Okay, I'll ask you one other question since you volunteered that. Did you purposely try to keep electors out of the area, and was that presented to the Boundary Commission that, to the best of the knowledge of the city, there were no electors?
I'm going to ask Kathy Suniak from our annexation team, with your permission, to answer that question.
Mr. Chair, members of the Commission, I'm Kathy Suniak from the Eugene Planning Office. With response to the question about that particular annexation, that annexation was initiated at the request of several industrial property owners in the area who requested sewers. At the present time, we do not have a sewer line available to them. To provide sewer service to them, we would need to construct a pump station and a sewer line. In order to be able to finance doing that, we expanded the annexation, included 9 non-consenting property owners. There were 10 consenting property owners. Expanded the annexation to include a portion of Beltline Road, again, to clear up the jurisdictional problems with police, intentionally leaving out the middle portion of Beltline Road specifically to avoid causing a threat or the feeling of threat to the River Road area. The council at that time had made clear that they had no intention of islanding River Road. When we did put together the annexation, at that time we were not aware that there were any electors in that area, but we did not specifically design it to exclude electors.
Okay, when you say there were 10 that wanted to come in, 9 that didn't, those were non-occupied parcels in terms of residents, at least you thought they were.
At the time the annexation was initiated, we believed that there were no registered electors living on those properties, to the best of our knowledge.
One other issue, and I think it's a lot, two things really. 2 years ago, I mean, this is not a new issue, and I don't know how far back you'd have to go on where people could form cities and where they couldn't, and it's been pretty evident that the city of Eugene has not favored a city out there and has worked against legislation that would have provided for a possibility of a city out there, and I think that's pretty well documented. What have you done in the last 4 or 5 or 6 years to kind of work with the folks out there and talk to them about coming in? You have a double majority possibility of getting annexations in, and there still seems to be a little bit of resentment towards the city from those folks. What have you done to kind of lower that sense of resentment?
We have done a variety of things, and I think it's fair to say that there are, in fact, I know from my personal contact, that there are people in River Road, Santa Clara, who would like to be annexed. There are people who would not. And I think it hinges around cost, and the cost of the sewers, and sewers are expensive. And anyone who has a septic tank that's working for his house is not keen on paying a sewer bill. That's just a fact of life, and I have some personal sympathy for that. But I paid for the sewer in front of my house and for the street in front of my house, and I pay for all my city services because that's required to live in a city. And some of these people still have a rural orientation, even though they do live in what is an urban area. That, and I think that kind of conflict is practically, is inevitable in any situation like this, that you will not find enthusiasm among people for whom the system works. On the other hand, I have heard people practically in tears before the Boundary Commission begging for annexation because their septic tank didn't work. And that's the other side of the coin. There are people in this area who badly need this service and who are very grateful to the city of Eugene for bringing them a sewer line because they need it. We have had a number of contacts with citizens groups over the years. Citizens advisory team in River Road and Santa Clara working on the urban services plan. We have had various discussions with groups in that area over time. I personally am on the City Joint Parks Committee. We negotiated an agreement with the River Road Parks District about handling the taxation issues that come when we annex pieces of their territory. And we have an agreement worked out how to handle that situation and how to give those folks park service as they come into the city and allow them to continue to use their good facilities in River Road. We recently added a resident of River Road to our Joint Parks Committee, saying we're all in this together as a community in providing park services, and we want to hear your voice. There's one other thing that I'd like to say along this line that gets forgotten. These people don't really have any political voice in determining their own status. I mean, they're not represented on the Eugene City Council. They don't get to vote for anybody that deals with urban issues. Their police issues go primarily to the sheriff, who does little because of his very low budget, and to the state police, which operates out of Salem. They have no elected representative on a city council to call and say, hey, they're speeding on my street, will you please get the cop out here? They don't have that kind of access to the political process, which in my view they need, and which the city gives them, which is another little slant that you don't always hear.
One other thing, if you chose to, at your next council meeting or with appropriate notice, you could vote to extend the opportunity to have sewers and hook up to the sewers in the Santa Clara River Road area, get those people online, start charging them their service charge and their hookup fees, and start paying back for your $1 million plant without requiring them to become people that are residents of the city.
You're asking us to give an extraterritorial service without any real machinery for doing it. You know, we're a city with a boundary.
Right.
You're asking us to provide a service outside that boundary.
Is there something we can do to help you? Is there, are we standing?
Well,
I mean, this does happen in other areas. There are people that get city services. There are people that are hooked up to the Hillsborough, Forest Grove, Beaverton water system that are not in any one of those three cities, and they hook up and they pay a little bit more for it than if they were there and contributing all along.
Well, in our area, we'd have to start with an amendment to the Metropolitan Plan, which says that services will be provided by cities within the boundaries, and talk to our co-partners, Lane County and Springfield. That's where we'd have to start.
Have you ever discussed it?
No, we really haven't.
Hmm. Are there any other questions? Thank you. Sally Weston. And what is this? Welcome.
Good afternoon, Chairman Young and members of the committee.
We won't ask off the bat if you're just an average citizen or anything like that.
Pretty average. Go ahead, ask.
Welcome.
Thank you. I'm speaking as a former member of the Lane County Local Government Boundary Commission, and I was appointed first in 1977 by a Democratic governor and then again in 1981 by a Republican governor and served until 85. I had moved with my family to Eugene in 1970 from the East and had felt keenly interested in land use planning as the key to healthy population growth in this young and comparatively sparsely settled state. I had lived in New Haven, Connecticut, New York City, suburban Washington, D.C., and suburban Cleveland, Ohio. The city of Cleveland, a proud city in the early 20th century, had declared bankruptcy in the late 60s because it had been totally choked off by two or three rings, concentric rings of suburbs, cities into which all the money from the city had moved. There was no statewide planning goals. There were no locally agreed upon comprehensive plans. There was no neutral body interested in the well-being of the entire region. It was an incredible nightmare of uncoordinated incorporations, each with no place to grow, all cheek by jowl. The result was the death of a once great city. Now, 20 years later, many, many millions of dollars have been spent to revive the city, and many eastern cities are in this same shape. Oregon has been a shining example to the whole world, actually, of how citizens and governments can be stewards of the land. The state's repeated express commitment to SB 100 and our statewide planning goals has provided tools.